Streaming. Can you hear me, James?
I can hear you loud and clear.
Okay. We made some upgrades to the bus today, so it's we're, you know, getting up to speed with our upgrades.
See how it goes.
Yeah, Derek and Donna are on it. We did it earlier. We thought we were all set, and for some reason, it just didn't want to connect.
Yeah.
I had Dr. Judy on yesterday, and she said that they did a thing in California, and things are getting. I saw your video that you did on. Fact checking and everything. I want to talk about that definitely. You know.
Sure.
So what else you want to talk about?
Anything you want. I mean, I don't know.
Okay. All right. We're good. We'll go ahead. Wait for the stop the recording, Donna. I'll tell you when to start. Well, here I got the button. No, start the streaming. I got it. Thanks, Derek.
Yeah. Hi, James.
Hey.
Yeah, I did a show last week and last night with Sam Tripoli and Ripple Effect and I don't know, a bunch of guys that, you know, I recognize, but I don't know who they are. They were very interested in what you're doing, IPFS and everything. Donna, turn off this light right here. Blowing me up. Yeah, turn that one down. Turn it down. More. Yeah, just turn it off. It's pulling from the ceiling. Because I got such a dark background now, it's doing whatever. So it's, but it's opposite. You're always dark. There you go. Oh, Donna, turn off this light. I think that's the one that's doing it. And turn off the red mood lighting. So I... All right, let's just get to it. Yeah, we're here at Pork Fest, and it's, you know, it's busy. All right, you ready, Donna?
Yeah.
All right, hitting the recording. Welcome to Declare Your Independence from the Love Bus at Porcupine Freedom Festival in Lancaster, New Hampshire. And but we've got to take time out, man, even though it's night and it's time to partay, which is going to happen right after I get done talking to James Corbett. Because if you don't talk to James Corbett, you don't know what the hell's going on. And I'll be the smartest SOB at the campfire. Watch this, you know, so I'm going to do good. All right, James, I watched your all your videos, of course, and the most recent one on fact-checking. And what we're looking at is people that want to be critical, and you have all these different fact-checkers that are going to do it, but then you find out all of them are funded by Gates, you know? And then the way that you described it, I want you to define the problem and how you're dealing with it, because I knew you would. You just, I'll bring it on. So go ahead and explain to people what's going on.
Well, I imagine that most of your audience doesn't need to be told this, but I'm sure you have encountered fact checks as in the last several years, but especially in the past several months. It's really been ramping up. And, you know, Snopes is the paradigmatic example of this. Everyone gets sent a Snopes link. If they try to send any information that's counter to the mainstream, they would at one point have gotten a Snopes link debunking it. Oh, that claim has been debunked. And when you look into the debunk, it is generally bunk. But not many people do, because they are that isn't really the point of what fact-checking is about. The fact-checking is to give the institutional gloss of a stamp of imprimatur from some authority to tell you this is fake news so you can dismiss it. So, I've been talking about this. I did a podcast last week, but I found it interesting that between the time I recorded that podcast and the time I actually released it, I received separate emails. So we're talking four separate emails from different people about fact fact checker states is definitely swirling.
Hey, James, go ahead. We got graphics. Go ahead. We got graphics. Go ahead and kill your video. We're losing. You're starting to chop up a little bit. And I want to hear everything you're saying. Donna, give me a full screen on the Zoom. So you're the fact checking. You have these different organizations and so on that have popped up. You know, they all combined to come after James. I apologize. Go ahead and repeat what you were saying, please.
That's right. So these sites are starting to multiply, and people are probably finding there's new ones popping up. It's not just Snopes anymore. It's factcheck.org. It's africacheck.org. It's thelogicalindian.com. There's a whole slew of them. And more often than not, when you look into these fact checkers, they do have funding, actually specifically from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, interestingly, but from a whole slew of the types of foundations you would expect, including the Open Society, i.e. George Soros, and those types of similar-minded globalist foundations and institutions. So there is an ecosystem of fact-checking sites that's being created right now. In fact, the Poynter Institute, Poynter.org, has created an international fact-checking network, IFCN, which is this compendium of all of the approved fact-checkers so that the Facebooks and Twitters and Googles of the world can use all of those approved IFCN fact checkers for their fact checks that they slap all over content these days. And of course,
okay, no, wait. So you're saying that there's like a branding, like AAA approved restaurant or something? Is that what they're starting to do?
IFCN has a code of principles, and there are a number of organizations that they actually certify as certified fact checkers. And if you get certified by the IFCN, that means, for example, Facebook or Twitter or Google will include you as a verified fact checker, which is part of the interesting, I mean, this is the interesting nature of what's coming along, because I have mused, wouldn't it be great if there was some, you know, multimillionaire with some money to burn who wanted to fund some real fact-checking site that would do real independent fact-checking? But even if they did that, that would never be approved by this IFCN, and it would never be adopted by Facebook or Twitter or Google or what have you. So, it's crafty what they're doing, but essentially they're, as I say, this isn't, at the end of the day, this isn't about fact-checking. It is about exactly what I demonstrated in my most recent video from a listener who had, she's a mother, a grandmother, I think, her 34-year-old son responded to her. She'd sent him the Who is Bill Gates documentary. He responded by saying, oh, he's lying to you. Look at this. This is fake news. And he sent a couple of fact-checking links and said, don't listen to that guy anymore. And of course, as I detail in the video, those fact-checking links that he sent have nothing to do with what I actually said in the video, but that's not what matters. This is just someone who saw some information he didn't like. He Googled some keywords. The first fact check that came up, he emailed it to that person to say, look, it's been debunked. This is all it's about. It's not about really passing information to each other. So I want to bring this to the forefront, because there's clearly, this is part of the agenda for controlling information on the internet going forward from here. And as I say, they're creating this entire ecosystem to basically control it on all of these controlled platforms.
Yes, and I've experienced it myself, certainly with, you know, anything that you do any kind of checking on, all of a sudden you're going, man, they're just twisting this. And I thought you did such a good job in going down the details of everything that the son pointed out, but it was so perfect for you. You know, this, I just know, I'm going, all right, you guys asked for it, here comes James. But it seems that it was tailored either towards those particular issues or maybe even you. So if he puts in James Corbett, you know, I'm sitting here, I'm going, you know, I think I'll just checky that right now while you're talking. I'll go ahead and put James Corbett in a Google search or something and vaccines or whatever, and I want to see the cornucopia of hits that come up on how you're to be discarded or something. And yeah, it looks like you made it, man.
There's one of the main kind of, it's not a fact checker site, it purports to find whether there is bias in various media sites, and they have an entry on me that deems me to be pseudoscience and a tinfoil hat conspiracy theorist. Surprise, surprise. But other than that, actually a lot of these fact checkers like Africa Check and what have you, they don't address my work specifically. And I think that's done on purpose, to be honest. They, as I pointed out, they take these, the most sort of fringe tangential claims that they can find. Oh, somebody on Facebook said this on some post that we dug up that had 100 shares. 100 shares. Let's not talk about, you know, this documentary with a million views. Let's talk about some fringe person on Facebook that no one's ever heard of with 100 shares.
Yeah, but we care what he says, even though he has 100 shares, man. That's a whole 100. I mean, yeah, it was just weird.
Exactly. I mean, they want to portray this as fringe, nutty information that comes from Facebook memes, rather than looking at, you know, people like myself who actually does research and really does back it up, as I hope I showed in that fact check. I mean, in that fact check, essentially, I was talking about two, maybe three paragraphs of material out of that, 20,000 word transcript of that Bill Gates document, whatever it was. And literally, just those couple of paragraphs, that represented at least a dozen hours of research. Just to come up with those few sentences and say exactly what can I say and what can I not say here based on the research. And I really do research every bit of it like that.
You know, the one thing that you did, it was on the Kenya thing. And I remember these things, they're sterilizing Africa and all this stuff would come up. And what the controversy was is that the tetanus shot was had some hormone that was causing infertility in the women because they want, you know, it's population control. I mean, they keep been going on about this forever. Well, the Kenyans are going, oh, heck no. And a television station there and some journalists were covered this for years. I mean, it was a thing with a, you know, the Catholic Church or Catholic doctors or whatever, they could say, look, we could see what's going on. And what you referenced, you said, you know, this controversy, but, you know, it's still ongoing. You weren't ready to make any claims or anything. You just said that there was this controversy. And then, of course, they kept hammering on that. You go, okay, well, let's go look at the controversy. Then you showed the video and a lot of the coverage and everything and the articles and such of the controversy. And you go, holy crap. You know, it. You know, I mean, I understand why you just reported on the controversy because of all the stuff that was still going on. But the what you saw was so overwhelming. And I just love the counterpunch that you do. So people come and do this and you go, well, heck, I could just do a whole dang video on your complaining about whatever that you shouldn't have been complaining about, and you did it wrong. So I wonder, did Mom ever call you back?
As I said in that video, I could, I don't know if I could do it, but someone should do an entire documentary just on that Kenya case. It really is a fascinating story.
No, I remember when it was going on, you know, that was one of the highlights. I'm going, yeah, these guys, they definitely got an agenda. So this is, did you ever get a response back from the mom?
I did, actually. So I when she first emailed me, I emailed her back pretty much right away with all of those main points that I made in the video, obviously in text form. And she emailed me back to say, oh, wow, thank you for doing that. Oh, I should have known there was something up with these fact-checking sites, blah, blah, blah. So she was immediately swayed back over, which I'm not even sure that's a good thing, because it sounds like she's the kind of person who believes whatever the last person who spoke kind of said. You know what I mean?
Well, which is what kind of the point was what you were making. You were going, look, people, you know, don't trust me. I put the research there. You see the hyperlinks. I got the, you know, show notes. I mean, you know, go do your own thing. If somebody challenges you, go look, you know, but that's not the world that we live. I know when I watch this stuff that I've seen it so many times that I do give you way more credibility than, you know, might be healthy for a newbie, but I know better. I know this is exactly how you do your work. So I'm going, you know, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. Right. I get it. No one's going to check every single fact they hear every single day. That would be impossible, even if it was something you wanted to do, which most people don't. And I get that. But hopefully for people who are interested in a specific thing, like if you're going to say, well, this entire documentary is ruined because you include this fact about Kenya. Well, at least, I mean, bother to find out what I said about Kenya versus, you know, what I actually linked and what it, you know, where's the documentation. If you're going to dispute something, or if you're going to share something and say, hey, you need to see this piece of information, at least do the due diligence on that and find out what's behind it, because otherwise you will be blown over by the first wind of opposition that comes your way.
You know, that's one thing that I noticed during this whole COVID thing and everything that's going on is, and we've been saying this for decades, you know, the future is credibility. And that's what they're lacking. And it's just like any political campaign. They don't want or need or have to or can bolster their own credibility and still do what they're doing. So it's always negative campaigning. Negative campaigning on concepts, on people, on candidates, you know, on everything. It's you know, but they're worse. I'm like, what? You know, so it feels like we're going for the win. You knew this had to happen. You knew this had to happen. And now their credibility is like nothing. And all this stuff comes out. And now, oh my God, Corbett has this treasure trove of all this information. Oh, I don't know if I did with this with you before, but I'd like to give an order of which introduction to James Corbett, what videos they should watch in what order. What do you think?
Yeah, go ahead. Okay. I sometimes get that kind of question, and I just literally have no idea how to answer it.
Okay. Here you go. Here's for the audience. This is my recommendation. I would start off with the early, not early stuff, but you know, the earlier timeline when you did the World War I conspiracy. Now that was at least what? It was two or three episodes. How many was that?
Three.
Okay, so you got three episodes of, so that's, I don't know, a few hours, a while, but you get three episodes of the World War I conspiracy. After that, then I think you should watch Century of Enslavement about the Federal Reserve. You know, it kind of dovetails into that. You start to get it. Then you go back and watch, you know, how big oil conquered the world. And then you go, why? And then you do Bill Gates. And then you do the fact-checking thing, and you're caught up, and you're done.
Wow. What an insult to everything else I've ever done.
I know. You know what I mean. But, oh, no, that means they're going to go back to all the other stuff. Once they do those, they're going, oh, my God, man, what else has he done?
Honestly, I pride myself on the fact that I do have an archive that does stand up, and you can go back, you know, 8 years, 10 years, whatever it is, and you can find stuff that is still relevant today that's actually important. And I like that some of my best stuff is kind of the hidden stuff, the hidden gems that most people don't even know about or haven't seen that people will discover one day. Oh, you know, that's a really great episode.
Yeah.
Like how to herd your tax cattle. I think a really important, really good episode that really came out very well, but most people haven't seen it.
Yeah, Donna, how you herd your tax cattle. Make sure you put that in the show notes. I want to watch it. All right. See, well, you can understand, you know, how big oil conquered the world. You wonder where that would go. You know, would it go be, you know, would you think you would mix episodes like watch How Big Oil Conquered the World, the first, you know, that one, and then you watch then watch the episodes, maybe not, or How Big Oil Conquered the World after the first episode of the World War One conspiracy. You know what I mean? You kind of, you know, put stuff in the middle. The reason I did it the way I did is because you need to get an early on view of who these people are and what they're trying to do and, you know, their lines. And you go, so that's World War One. Then, you know, then it resulted in, right after that. I mean, right after that, you get the Federal Reserve. No, wait a minute. The Federal Reserve was before. Hell, that's how we got World War One. Okay, so would you, No. Federal Reserve, yeah. What was the year timeline on those? Am I getting this right? The Federal Reserve enabled them to spend the money in one?
Yeah, right, because 1913, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm going to, do you think that was connected? Should you have Century of Enslavement then watch World War One?
Probably. Again, this is the kind of thing, like, how would you introduce someone to the work? And it really depends on the person, because everyone has their own interests. But if you're just trying to talk generally about the, you know, the broadest section of the public, I would probably start with why Big Oil Conquered the World, because I think that's a subject everyone knows something about, but I doubt anyone that you randomly encounter will know all of that history or really have connected those dots on their own. There's a lot of information in there that I think will surprise people and will connect with them. So I would actually probably start with that, then go to Century of Enslavement, then go to World War. In the current climate, I would go why Big Oil Conquered the World, then Bill Gates, because those stories line up in a way that if you've seen the Big Oil, then you understand the Bill Gates story.
And you know, let me give you my reasoning, and maybe you can, you know, understand. You know, this would be good if you did a video that kind of highlighted those. It'd be like a highlight trailer reel to go watch all those things. That would be an awesome video. you know? And I think that'd be a good marketing. But anyway, the reason I did that is because when you get to the Bill Gates thing, you're seeing the culmination of the philosophy that you demonstrated in the World War I conspiracy. And when you did Century of Enslavement, it's more, yeah, these bad guys that did this and kind of they're whatever, and this is the result and what happened, and they did this other stuff. And, you know, it's bad. I mean, it's you know, I'm selling it short. But the World War One conspiracy, it tells you how these people think, what it is they're wanting to do, the kind of the families and the philosophical mindset of this elitist mentality and the eugenic kind of thing, you know, and it just all that you're going, wow, man, these guys are messed up. And, you know, then because you got a lot of buildup going into World War One, and then, you know, of course, the Federal Reserve kind of enabled that, and then you have the Federal Reserve was a result of a lot of these guys that had this philosophy, but it wasn't just the Federal Reserve, it was World War One. They had an agenda, you know, it was like a timeline. So then when you do How Big Oil, and then, you know, after that, and you go, whoa, man, they're depth, you know, yeah, maybe How Big Oil, that might be the first one, you know. Then World War One. See, I just like the fact that you get into their minds, because now when we're dealing with what's going on right now is a direct result and the progeny of all of that that you described so well in those videos. And I'm going to, if you watch these and you get this background, then you can see what's happening and why and by whom.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not going to dispute any of that. That's true. I'm not sure there is a logical order, because all of these pieces do fit together. And I'm not sure it's chronological per se. But yeah, I mean, it really depends, I think, what's going to tickle people's fancies. Just for the record, I do have a Best of the Corbett Report page at corbettreport.com/best of, where I list in the via various categories some of the most important reports. But it's already several dozen reports long, and I could add several dozen more easily to that.
Yeah, well, how many total videos have you done?
I honestly don't know. It's going to be probably over 1,500 by this point. In just videos, over 1,500 interviews, a few hundred, almost 400 podcasts. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of stuff in there.
I like the documentaries, man. I use them a lot. That's why we're, you know, doing what we can to save them, because I want to make sure that this understand. You know, there was a episode that was Tucker Carlson or something, one of the videos we put up on Freedom's Phoenix or something, and he said the reason that you hear Pelosi and Adam Schiff say these stupid ass things, I mean, it's just, that's not what happened, it's just BS for the cameras, and they put it on MSNBC and CNN, and, you know, a lot of it on Fox, and they go, and he said the reason is so our grandchildren will see that in their textbooks. That's what they're going to see. They're not going to see what happened or what really went on. They're going to see what they want you to see in the official approved textbook, you know, online, whatever the heck Google says. And I'm going, damn, that is exactly what's going to happen and why you need to be preserved.
Exactly right. And in fact, this is a point I made in my History is Written by the Winners podcast, which was a good podcast that I should add to the best of list, actually. Precisely, this is the point. What becomes history is the official approved story. And that's why I am here bearing testament to what is going on right now, because I do hope that this survives as some sort of record of this time period that will help people in the future really understand what was going on right now, rather than the whatever crap is written in their history textbooks.
Well, tell us what it is that you think is going on. I mean, we talked about a lot of things. It's banking, finance, you know, energy, big oil, pharmaceutical companies, you know, come out of the oil and all this. But it's really a philosophy of something. These are like tools. What are they using them for?
Well, I think that is the story, essentially, that Why Big Oil is telling, and that connects into the Bill Gates story. And that is the story of eugenics as a type of fig leaf of a justification for ruling over society. It is just the most up-to-date pseudoscience, you know, scientific glossy sounding justification for why there are certain people who are fit to rule over everyone else. There have been other justifications used in the past, the divine right to rule and all of that. But here we are in the scientific age, so it's a genetic thing. And I think that that encapsulates the story of the last century of history and the coming century, because eugenics just takes different forms in different eras. It was about involuntary sterilization and all that in the early 20th century. It was about environmentalism and the green movement. Late 20th, early 21st century, it's about transhumanism and technocracy in the late 21st century.
Technocracy. I remember the Zbigniew Brzezinski, how you say his name, you know, wrote Between Two Ages, America's Role in the New Technotronic Era thing. And that right there, once you become an activist or you know, libertarian, you start getting politically involved and everything, there's certain things, just like James Corbett videos, that people wanted you to see. You need to look at this, you need to look at this, you need to know about that, you got to have this conspiracy under your belt, you need to know what that. And there was a handful of these things that were just front and center, and you had to go do your own research and find out what's up, and you kind of get a beat on things. You're it now. You're the next generation of that. This is, you know, there wasn't that first thing, you got to read Atlas Shrugged, you know, and plow through that, and you kind of get, you know, the mindset of these people. And I'm going, you know, government and those that it attracts, but you're going way deeper. You're down to these, but I'm wondering where it came from. You know, these people, was it before Rockefeller? Was it before Rothschilds and these guys? Was it before Cecil Rhodes? Was it before these guys? Is it something that they're carrying on?
I think so. I mean, as I say, I think that what they're propounding is really just the latest justification in a series of justification for why we need to be ruled. I mean, ultimately, that's what this is about, why there needs to be rulers and there need to be ruled. Unfortunately, that equation changes at the precise point at which they don't need the human tax cattle anymore. And that's where I think the depopulation starts, which is why that's always sort of the dark shadow of all of this, that there is a depopulation agenda, and they will switch from soft kill to hard kill at exactly that point at which they calculate they can get away with it.
You think that's it, where they think they can get away with? You know, it's so
what else is going to stop them? Yeah, yeah. It's exactly what you always say. Can they? Then they are.
Yeah, I know. And damn it, I look at a lot of they can. You're looking at they want to, and I'm going, yeah, and they can, so I guess we're screwed. You know, this is, we're up at Porcupine Freedom Festival in northern New Hampshire, and it's, the attitude is totally different. You know, they're, you know, positive, they're, you know, buying pigs and cows and horses and, you know, learning, and they're gardening and they're spending their time. They step back from the activism and they out plowing fields and doing and taking care of food. And then this is almost like a Thanksgiving here. They're starting to have some of the food come to fruit, and they're slaughtering some of the animals, and they're out and they're going, look, we will not starve. It's a positive outlook on things. And I'm glad to see that. But, you know, just like last October, November, when a friend of mine were back here from Arizona, and the people were just so, like, unionized compared to Arizona. And it was just, the service was bad there. And my friend said, there's a great culling coming. And this culling, I'm going, are they the same people that you think the elites want to take out, the ones that are just, you know, the useless eaters kind of thing, according to them? You know, how do you pick that? You know, freedom takes care of that thing. You know, just let it go, and it'll work its way out, and they'll just probably get more productive. But it also, when they do this culling, when you have this kill-off, who's going to be left? A bunch of Ernies and James Corbetts. I mean, you know, out here, we didn't fall for your crap, and we got our stuff. Are they planning for that? Is there another wave of taking it out when you got only the neos left?
Yeah, I think a lot of the people who think that they are inside the club will find that they are not inside the club when the real culling begins. As always, one of the things that we can always hope for is that there is enough infighting amongst the would-be controllers that they will end up basically killing each other off. Just as one intriguing example, it was... there are some suspicions and suspicious circumstances surrounding the death of Nelson Rockefeller that I don't know. I haven't looked into it greatly, but I have seen that there's definitely some smoke there regarding the story of how Nelson really died and whether David had a role in that. That kind of thing, the actual, sometimes literal, backstabbing of the people at the top could really be the saving grace of this, because I think there is a lot more of that than we give it credit for at our level, where a lot of people think it's a monolithic conspiracy. It's all just one thing. It's ruled by one person and they all have the same idea. No, I think there are competing people within this power structure, and they will be warring with each other too.
What do you mean? In what way? By countries, by industries, by competition in the oil industry? I mean, what do you think?
I think countries play less of a role in it than we would tend to believe, although I'm sure there's some element of that, if not countries, at least, I mean, just broadly, ethnicities or what have you. I mean, I'm sure the Chinese elite do cooperate and play ball with the Western elite, but to what extent are they going to be on each other's teams when push comes to shove, or if there's something at stake? I mean, obviously there are competing interests in things like that, but just in terms of family lines and whatever, and I don't claim to know have the entire map, organizational map of who's really at the top and blah blah blah, because I'm not there.
Yeah,
and
that's not my thing. You know, this organization, it's a philosophy. I've for years, I mean, it's only been in the last, few years that it's really starting to, gel a little bit for me. It's not as confusing. It's that these people, they got a screw loose, man. I mean, they're of a mindset. And the sociopathic tendencies, this lack of empathy thing, it's like it's the bloodline is to breed out empathy. I mean, they're wanting to, it's easier for them to rule. It doesn't bother them. And then you create these power centers of shiny badges and guns, militaries and so on, and they're attracted to that because they find it useful for what they want to do, and they're not concerned about, the mayhem that they cause. In fact, then you get into this more crazy area. What do you call them? You got the sociopaths and psychopaths. You get to the point to where they enjoy watching Rome burn. And I'm going, it's like the Dark Knight or something. Some people just want to watch the world burn. And yeah. Do you think it's gotten to that point and that's starting to rise to the top more? Or is it still just they just have a justification that they should rule?
Yeah, I think that the idea of the dumbing down of society probably is a general thing. And I would say that the grandsons or granddaughters of the would-be controllers of society are probably not at the same level as, their grandfathers and grandmothers and whatever, who were more literate and more dedicated to knowledge of the world and what have you. And I think there is, I think that's one aspect of what we're seeing right now, is a general sort of impatience, let's just speed things along, which might explain why there does seem this sort of rushed Agenda 2030, all right, let's make it 2020, let's get to the goal. I think there is some, I'm not sure it's desperation so much as just boredom, impatience, a lack of vision or what have you, because as I've always said, I think that assuming they want to take us in the direction they say they want to take human society, where we're basically just robotic tax cattle that will do whatever, genetically modified, whatever we become, transhuman garbage. Assuming that's where they're heading, they could get us there. It would take a few generations, and they just a little bit at a time, little bit at a time, little bit at a time. There would be people like you and me who would say something about it, but most people would go along with it. They would get their goal. But if you try to do it in a few years, it's not going to work. It's going to fall apart. And I see them rushing at the moment, which in a way is almost good for us, because I really do think it will wake people up much faster than if they just took the slow, sure Fabian socialist method.
Well, they want to speed it up because they're desperate. They feel somebody's waking up, they're being found out, there's too many Corbett documentaries. I mean, what I when Brexit happened, I didn't dig it too much. Then this Trump thing came around, and like, and it wasn't so much Trump as it was just people going, man, I hate all y'all. You guys hate Trump? Yeah, what the hell? I hate you too, so, Trump. And I'm going, this is, I can feel the desperation, How successful do you think they're going to be? Because I'm sure they believe their own press. I'm sure they sit around and encourage each other as they're sacrificing kittens or whatever, you know. But I'm just wondering what you think their likelihood of success is short term. In the end, well, this, they always lose, but, you know.
Actually, I think this goes back to what we were saying earlier about the fact-checking and things like this, that actually does seem sort of like a desperation move of trying to control the narrative. Because, of course, as we know, the censorship mechanisms are in place, and they can scrub people off the net, or at least try to. Obviously, we have IPFS and other ways of surviving that kind of thing. But they could come down harder with the direct censorship. But I think they know that the direct censorship like that actually draws attention. It is the Streisand effect. So I think what they want to do is really control people's minds so that that stuff is still there and it's still available, but it comes with the you know, the fact checker warning. So most people won't, I better not look at that info. Yeah. People will do it themselves. And I think that speaks to the fact that we really, really are having an effect. I mean, I say this a lot, and I think people maybe gloss over that. Oh, yeah, you know, it's just hot air. No, I really do think we have changed the old paradigm that they had really coalesced. By the turn of the 21st century, the information oligopoly was almost complete. As we've all heard, there were 5 or 6 corporations that controlled 90%+ of everything you saw, read, or heard on a daily basis. That all changed in the past couple of decades, and they are trying to institute the new information oligopoly like the old one. And if they are successful in that, it will be the Orwell memory, whole 1984, like complete control of everything at the digital level, which will be even worse than the old paradigm. But at any rate, that's what they're trying for. But until we get there, we really have thrown a gigantic monkey wrench in their works, which might speak to part of the sort of desperation. But there are other things involved in such calculations that we...
Hey, go ahead and try your video. I think we've got bandwidth now.
Hey.
Hey, there you go. All right. Some people, they don't get to see you live. They don't like it.
It might be.
You know, one of the things that we're doing here is we're talking to a lot of the tech guys that come to Porcupine Freedom Festival. And I do my standard, I need my, Catapult channel and all that stuff. But the main thing is I'm looking for that decentralization thing. And one of the guys, from AnyPay, Derek Jay and Steven Zeiler, they said there is a new app. It's called Twetch, T-W-E-T-C-H .app, something like that. And what it does is that you are able to maintain ownership of all your content like it was Twitter. And you got a digital pairing. But the bottom line is, if they go communist or anything, you're able to take your entire account with you. And go, and then there's other competing. So it would be like taking your Facebook and Twitter and going, I'm taking my football and going over here. So I'm like, this is just the mindset that they even think of that.
It's part of the Fediverse? Is that what they're calling it?
I'm just now starting. I just found out about it today. They were talking about it. I'm going, thank goodness. I mean, just they're even thinking this way. Yay.
It's been around for a few years now, but I haven't... I haven't gotten into it myself.
Well, they were talking about this new app that has it to where it's you pay to put stuff up, but then you get paid for, people look at in crypto of whatever, and I don't really care. Right. What I thought was interesting is the fact that when they ban you on Twitter, or they shadow you on this, or you go, all right, screw you, man. I got it, and you go over, which you've already duplicated a lot of your stuff, and of course we have the IPFS and all that. But this is for everybody. This makes Facebook, when they started taking ownership of your pictures of your kids, and so on. And where I just got to tell the story, my daughter had one of those really good 3D uterus baby pictures, that you get the kid and they come out, look, you go, damn, man, I already got a first grade picture when they're 8 months old in the womb. But I'm going, she took that and put it on Facebook, so now my grandkid is facial recognition before he's born. before it's born. And then they want to have ownership of all these photos. And I'd love the fact that you have a social media, if you choose to do something like that, that your information is yours. They, you know, you're able to take it with you. You can share, dude. But Facebook, if you leave, they got all your stuff. They're still keeping, you know, copies of everything. They still got your profile. They still know all the people and kind of the contact, the network of the whatever. So I'm just, this is a new time, and I'm wanting to know what you think technology and the awareness and people that have been awoken by information and the stuff that you do, where do they fit in the future? And what future is there going to be to fit in? Is there going to be a place for us to be left alone?
Excellent questions. Not the way things are going, for sure. But I mean, there's always, let me put a caveat on that. There's always has been and probably always will be space for hacks around the system, or hacks through the system, or ways to decentralize off of the system. And I think there's always space left for that on purpose. For things like, I mean, as people point out, they can't go to a completely cashless society because they always need to have their cash, black money to play around with so that they can fund the Contras or whatever it is. They always need those kind of back doors. So they leave them open for their agents and for people, for honey traps and blackmails and whatever. So there's always space, but it's always kind of the rogue space. Like, think of the cantina in Star Wars or whatever, like all the hive of villainy and wretched scum, whatever, will congregate. I mean, you will be a hard and dirty person if you play around in that crypto space or whatever it is, but at least that will exist, I think, at all times, again, so long as humanity remains humanity. But it will be hard, and harder, presumably, to access those kinds of hacks and workarounds, and people will have to actively desire it and work for it. And that's why so much of the key to what they do is propaganda and indoctrination to get people to actually want to be part of their system rather than to find the ways around it.
You know, I used to say that a lot. I go, you know, it's taken generations and trillions of dollars to convince people that they need, want, or inevitably gotta have whatever it is that they're selling or offering or making you take. And I'm going, that's encouraging. You know, that it took that much time and that much money, and freedom is always, and we saw, you know, sporadically over my lifetime, you know, probably the best example had been the Ron Paul Revolution thing, to where an entire generation just started thinking, and they had access to the information to do it. They had to come after it. That was so neon flashing obvious to me. They had to come after it. Well, that's why I'm encouraging the next, to where they can't go after it, because if they can, they are, you know. So I'm hoping that you'll keep doing what you're doing. What would stop you from doing what you're doing? I mean, you know, why would you? I mean, do you enjoy it? Is it, you know, you got a big giant nest egg, and I'm going to the Caymans? I mean, you know, what's your plan?
It is what I do. I would be doing this even if I wasn't doing it for a website. I would be doing research anyway, so might as well do it to spread to others. That's not really the calculation. Death would stop me, I suppose. So there you go. Put that on the table. And yes, actually, I was just having this conversation the other day on a different podcast. I was noting, isn't it crazy that you get people like David Rockefeller or Henry Kissinger, who's now pushing almost 100, but still actively involved into their 90s, actively involved, going around the globe, being hands-on a part of the shaping of this great work that they're working on. What motivates someone to do that?
Something else. Yeah, it's exactly. Not just self-motivating. Exactly. There's something else. This is what I'm...
Right, and also I just wanted to say, so my point was, yeah, I am dedicated to this. This is what I do. I presume I'll be doing this for a long, long time. But I imagine if I live to, you know, 97, I probably will not be doing a daily podcast and all of this, right? At some point, I'll be like, okay, I've done my bit for humanity.
You'll be doing something. I mean, you know, I mean, of course, technology will be God knows what it is. You'll just, you'll have your eyeball replaced and they just live your life and whatever. But, you know.
You know what? I might be the last, the part of the last generation that dies, rather than the first generation that lives forever. And I would be not at all sad about that.
You know, my immortality, it came with, you know, it's children and grandkids. You know, once you did your
that's
part,
human, you, exactly.
Yeah,
that's
once you pass that on and you do, there, yeah. there's you go. I'm good. I think I should check out now before I do something screwed up.
Yeah,
happy live forever.
And now it's up to your children and your grandchildren, and you pass along those seeds of kernels of wisdom and everything that you've accrued through your life and your parents and grandparents, and you pass them on. That is the human chain. It's been around for however many generations. I'm continuing it. I hope my children will continue it. But now they're saying, no, death, no, you're going to merge with the machine. You're going to put your consciousness in a computer and you'll live forever. I don't get the appeal of that. I do not understand why people...
You know, I wouldn't pass a law to say you can't. I mean, you know, if you want to do it, peace out. Right. I don't care. But it's part of that education thing. You know, there's going to be elixirs and solutions and whatever, and all you have to do is sacrifice, you know, so many animals or children or whatever the heck. You know, the promises. And you were talking about Rockefeller. He's still at an old age. You know, they're going out there. You know, Kissinger's freaking got to be wheelbarreled everywhere. So I'm just going, you know, this is... Is it something driving them to justify their existence in their last days? Is it to be right? Do they really feel that they're doing us a favor? Or is there something else pressuring them? Is there a thing? There's something to get them up out of bed. There's a, you know, it's like, you know, the conciliary or something of the mob, and it's generational. The young guy comes in and makes sure the godfather gets out there, you know, it's just, and it's his job by the committee of what, you see what I mean? It's like there's a machine that we're not seeing.
Yeah. Well, not being a psychopathic billionaire would-be world controller, I can only speculate. But the only way that I think the average person can relate to that kind of drive would be some sort of religious something.
Right.
But this isn't just about the here and now. This is about some sort of great work, as they have called it in their secret societies for a very long time. Why? What is motivating that? And that's when you get into they're getting this from interdimensional, alien, demon, whatever, that kind of stuff. You know, sure, I don't know. The universe is crazy. It's probably much crazier than I can ever possibly know, but that's the kind of stuff I can't exactly document. So,
well,
I don't know.
You know, that's what you tried in Why Big Oil Conquered the World. Now, when you put the big word why, and then you do the kind of real work that you do, because a lot of people go, you know, why is this? They just want to, you know, explain and have their own agenda. You know, they're just like an excuse to do that. But when you do it, and you go, why? You really went out there. I mean, you threw it out. You're going, I'll tell you why, because they're freaking nuts, you know, because they want eugenics, and they think they should rule, and they're going to do whatever. So
But there's always the why underneath the why. I mean, the why, okay, eugenics, but... why eugenics?
Right.
Why do they believe this?
Exactly.
What's belief that? And there's clearly something more there, but again, that's the kind of level I can't penetrate that deep with.
You know, when I first started doing radio, that was one thing that I made a big point of. I go, you know, nobody asks why anymore. They just don't ask. Well, this is, I go, okay, why? And I'll do that when I bring statists on. I go, I tell them up front, I go, look, I'm going to ask you why three times during the interview. You know, I just FYI. I mean, you go blah 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 blah, and I'm going to ask why. I just want you to know. And if you get it at the right time, they have no idea. You know, they're just repeating what somebody said, and they don't want to tell you why. You know, or really what's motivating them.
Or maybe they don't know. Some people are uncomfortable saying they don't know.
Yeah,
I'm not. I mean, there is some base level at this that I'm sure. I'm sure it's crazy. I'm sure it's crazier than we can imagine. Hey, here's one possibility for why would they be rushing this? What if there is some sort of, you know, cataclysmic whatever, magnetic pole shift or great solar minimum or whatever that they know about, that they know is coming, they need to get to Mars or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, how can we know what we don't know when it comes to things like that?
Yeah, you know, it could be playing out that Musk is out, you know, doing this out in the open. You know, he's been tasked by the man to do whatever. We've seen all these apocalyptic movies of the, you know, somebody survives. Who's going to get to go to Mars? I don't know if they're tapping on my door right away, you know.
Right. Well, Musk has certainly had help along the way, so why?
Yeah. You know, I'm at the age and done enough research and watch enough news. And really just live in the news. I mean, as activists, you see this stuff and you kind of, you know, you penetrate a little bit. You know, you go to court, you file suit, you run for office, you do all the stuff and the research and everything, and you come across people like you. And you get to the point to where the solution is the same. It's always you separate it from as much as you can. You isolate yourself, insulate, you know, be more self-sufficient, a little decentralization. There is no collective answer for everybody, blah, 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 and outlast them. And it's always about, are you going to be able to outlast them? And you're in Western Japan. I don't know, are you in a big metropolis, a city? Is there going to be a ripcord bug out to the countryside kind of bug out bag you got thing, or you know, yeah. What's gonna be your trigger to go?
Yeah, no, I'm in a city in a rural part of Japan, so I 10 minutes I'm out in the countryside, so that's not quite the concern. But yeah, it's always just a question of what can you actually survive depending on the level of cataclysm. And when things go Mad Max, I think, you know, a lot of people think that they're prepared, but I don't think they are. And you know, I'm not gonna step out there and say I'm perfectly prepared for everything. No, I don't think we can be. It's like to me when people say, oh yeah, well I would never use crypto because if there was an EMP and all, you know, all power in the world went out, I wouldn't be able to use my crypto. Well yeah, you'd also have some other big problems if your entire basis for whether or not to do something is whether there will be a worldwide, you know, cataclysm that will wipe out civilization. I mean, maybe that's not the only thing you should be preparing for, right? But I find that kind of, let's prepare.
Well, what are you preparing people for?
And nothing else to be kind of.
Well, what you're doing, you're preparing people. You're preparing people. You're informing them.
Exactly.
Them. I mean, what are you preparing them for? To sleep better.
Here's something that occurs to me. I don't frame my work in like I'm saving the world or I'm doing, but I do think obviously I'm putting information out there that I hope is useful to people, and I specifically hope it's useful to people who are in a position to do something with this information. And I can't know what that is or determine it ahead of time. But as an example, the guy who started BitChute cites my work and James Evan Pilato's works as his inspiration, or at least part of his inspiration for starting BitChute, because he heard us talking over and over about the censorship that's coming. And he's like, oh, I can create something that will help people around that. So he created BitChute. That's the kind of thing that I want to have happen, except on a, you know, even bigger scale. I want people who are really in the belly of the beast and really in these kind of tech companies that are increasingly controlling our lives to be aware of this information, what the real game plan is, and the fact that, oh, maybe you're working for a really, really bad agenda that you don't want to be a part of, that will ruin yourself and your entire progeny for, you know, seven generations. Maybe you should do something productive with that. And I hope that this message will reach the right ear on the right day. If not even directly through me, at least maybe someone that I reach will reach someone else who will pass along that idea. It's the kind of thing you can never calculate, but that's my vision for this, because I know there are a lot, there really are a lot more of us than there are of them, by which I mean, you know, real human beings who are trying to do good and trying to make the world better versus psychopaths trying to rule everyone. There are more of us. And I think, you know, there are enough people out there that once they see things in the right perspective, they will be able to apply their talents in the right way.
You know, one thing that I had described to me one time about how holograms work, and, you know, it's like a glass, you know, 3D hologram of the Statue of Liberty or something. You break it, and then you pick up a, you know, a quarter of it or a shard of it, the whole image is in there, you know, and it explained why, how it records the information in a hologram, whatever. I don't know why. But I'm going, that's how it is with small communities or small towns. You travel across the country and they got some bad guy doing something, some politician, some sheriff, some county commissioner, some, you just extrapolate that to president, United Nations, what, it's the same. Everything works the same. You have the town manager, a town attorney, a town judge, the law enforcement guy, and you got four or five positions and boom, you ruled, you know, the community. And you see that on any time you increase a jurisdiction, it happens. So I'm wondering, you know, before you go, just, you know, comment on this one thing. You have these communities that will survive this. You have people and families that will survive it. And then, you know, can we go to space and government's not invited? Or is there something in us that when you get to about a hundred and however many people or something, that is it a survival instinct, or there's something in us? Is it a human thing, or is it something that we can evolve past?
Well, you know, maybe we should turn to history for this, because here's a question for you. How did humanity survive the Ice Age? I mean, assuming that anything with regards to ancient history is even vaguely true, and there was an Ice Age 10,000 years ago that we came out of, 12,000 years, whatever. I mean, that's an incredible thing for humanity to have lived through and somehow eked out and came to the other side and have propagated all over the world. I mean, there's something, some amazing, incredible things happened, whatever they are, and I'm sure we don't know the details, but some sort of incredible event took place 12,000 years ago in the Younger Dryas to bring us out of it, whether it was a comet strike or whatever. Incredible things that we could not even possibly begin to imagine, because we've never lived through anything remotely like it, but incredible tectonic changes to the Earth, the climate, everything, and somehow humanity survived on the other side of it. So whatever that is, we have some ability to survive pretty much anything other than total annihilation of the planet. So I think if that is the criteria, we will survive whatever is coming. But
as what?
As you keep saying, you know, they're trying to change humanity at the genetic level. They're trying to engineer things at the nanotech, you know, level, and rearrange the Earth and all of this. Really, truly change the game completely, and that's the real danger.
I thanks for coming on. It just makes me feel better just talk to you. You know, when I see all your stuff, I'm like, oh my God. You know, but a lot of times, what we're looking to happen is just have people prepared in their mind and know how to think, how to do the research, encouraging them to find out for themselves, not to believe anybody, and to be just informed. You know, it's a responsibility we have, and if you're not informed, you're not allowed to bitch. You know, I just, you know, to keep your opinion to yourself if you're not going to do some research. And the best way to start is start watching some James Corbett videos. You know, I suggest World War One conspiracy, Century of Enslavement about Federal Reserve, How Big Oil Conquered the World, Why Big Oil Conquered the World, a gazillion other ones that he has, but for what's going on now, the Bill Gates four-part series. Because you do those, and it gives you an idea of what you're up against. And what you're up against... they, them, those that won't leave you alone, because they don't have to. It always comes down to that. Peace. Thanks a lot, James. You're always awesome, man. CorbettReport.com.
Have fun at the campfire.
Yeah, no, I'm on my way.
All right, take care.
Bye.